Some of our landings were desperate adventures. We are now prepared to meet the inevitable counterattacks with power and with confidence.
My name is Gary Butterfield.
My name is Cole Ross.
And you're listening to Bonfireside Chat, Ronnie Roundup.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get along, little Ronnies.
Yeah. Roundtable, kind of about the whole kind of witchy side quest thing we've got going on. Basically everything we've talked about since the previous roundtable, talking about Ronnie's quest and incidentally Thea and Godwin and stuff as well.
Yeah. Decemberist voice, the witch wife.
Hmm.
So we're good. First of all, this episode comes out on Christmas. If you celebrate, Merry Christmas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you don't, be safe and make it to the new year. Yeah.
Yeah. Have a good day regardless. Yeah. It's, you know, you probably have today off work. You might not. Capitalism is a nightmare. Yep. But if you don't celebrate Christmas and you just happen to have today off, I hope you get some good vibe in then.
Yeah. Go out. Enjoy being on the empty streets. I always love that spooky abandoned town on Christmas feel.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That is a really nice feeling, especially if there's snow.
Oh, yeah.
Like on the ground.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Hope everybody's doing fun stuff. You doing anything fun, Cole?
Just all the usual stuff. No, just Christmas at my mom's.
With the Cranks?
Yeah, watching Christmas repeat. With the Cranks.
Just on repeat.
TBS does the Ralphie 24-hour. I do Christmas with the Cranks.
Yeah, dark TBS. Tubi does Christmas of the Cranks over and over and over.
So just usual family stuff, and then we're taking a week off between Christmas and New Year's, so that's gonna be good.
Yeah, we're not recording. I'll probably end up recording with Jeremy or Will, but mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to. I'm getting very ahead on work. I'm gonna play a game for fun.
I know, right?
Which I'm excited about. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I'm gonna dip into that Marvel Midnight Suns.
Seems tailor made for you.
Very up my alley. The people say the talking is not great, and that's fine. But people say the combat is excellent, and I am way into that.
No.
XCOM X-Men.
Mm.
Exclaims Gary.
Together at last.
Yeah. Yep, finally. I'm really excited. Mm-hmm. What do you got planned for break?
For break, I'm probably going to do some playing for fun. I'm not sure exactly what just yet, but I'm going to just kind of relax. My break I will stop looking at the work screen and probably look at the reading stuff screen and playing stuff screen, you know.
The fun screen.
Yeah.
Yep. Good times. Hopefully everyone gets to take a little bit of time off. I know that's not always true.
Yeah.
But, so first up on this episode, we have our interview, as the way these roundtables work. This episode, we interviewed Lobos Jr. Had a mm-hmm. little chat with our friend, the speedrunner, challenge runner, streamer extraordinaire.
Yeah.
Lobos Jr. One of my, you know, one of the nicest guys we've met mm-hmm. Through this process.
Yeah.
I think just like a real, real solid dude and good person. And it is a fun interview, I think.
I think so, too. Yeah. So let's get to it.
All right. And for the interview segment of the Roundtable, this time we are joined by Lobos Jr. Hello.
Hello. Welcome. It's good to be back here on Bonfireside Chat.
Yeah. It's so great to have you.
Yeah.
Welcome back.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It seems like I know our audience is familiar, but on the off chance they're not, how might people in the Soulsborne fandom know you?
I have long streamed Souls challenge runs, speed runs, regular runs, all sorts of runs on Twitch. I've been streaming there for, oh man, I think like 13 years, 14 years now, and uploading to YouTube. Of course, over the course of time, there's been less that I can do in Souls games, so I stream a lot of non-Souls stuff these days, but that was my origin for sure.
Yeah, it's how you came to my attention. yeah. you know, our attention as well. You know, listeners through soul stuff. Listeners made, you know, if you hear back and everything, there's on first season, it's very quaint because when we discovered you, it was all pretty like very impressive and very amazing. Like the, you know, the Broken Dagger run and then like the ladle run in Dark Souls 2 and everything like inform a, like an idea, a vocabulary of like what's possible.
Uh-huh.
Right.
You know, in these, like you can go that far. Like you can go and do something that is that challenging and stuff. What are some of the, like weirdest or, kind of more out there, like challenge things that you've done?
One that I always like to bring up was Dark Souls 1, no heal, no bonfire. Just kind of no checkpoints, no warping, just run from point A to point B and then to point C and see if you could do it. A lot of my runs, I would never test or anything to see if they were possible. I would just start it and we would go. And sometimes, very rarely, but sometimes we would have runs that would end and we would just have, okay, this is either not possible or just very, you know, too tedious for my blood, which is saying something.
Is that the same one as the, like the depopulate Lordran?
So the clear Lordran run is that's like a no death. Pretty much all the bosses are dead, so you can just traverse all the areas and you kill every enemy in the game once that is there outside of the bosses. That was a fun run too.
Yeah, they're walking around a big empty Lordran.
yeah,
fun idea.
Unfortunately, if you get like two or three areas away, then they'll all respawn. So,
oh, that's too bad. Yeah.
But once you're done and you get to just kind of walk over all these ragdoll corpses, empty Lordran indeed.
the real post-apocalypse, stuff. So I have a vague sense, you know, just from following you on Twitter about your Elden Ring journey. That's why we're all here and we've kind of, you know, brought everything back, brought back guests and stuff because it's a big release and everything. So we just wanted to get like a temperature check, see where you're at on it, especially now that some of the dust has settled.
Definitely. You know? Well, Elden Ring, I mean, it came out and I played nothing else for about 3.5 months, just all Elden Ring all the time. And honestly, I love it. I'm personally a huge fan and it's even taken top position as far as my favorite FromSoft games. I know. And when I think it was maybe day four or five of playing it that I honestly could say that. And it wasn't just early hype. It's stuck. And there's a lot of reasons for that. And I'm sure we'll talk about plenty.
Yeah. So, I mean like by day five, did you go in having kept like a little bit of a blackout? Like how much did you engage with like hype going into it besides the anticipation of knowing it was going to be there?
Yeah. The only thing that I knew of Elden Ring going in was the initial announcement trailer and maybe the second piece of video that they ever released, but I avoided the network test. I avoided the story trailer. I avoided any of that. And I was pure blind, which was, you know, not, man, I don't know the last time I had done that. Maybe Dark Souls 2.
Yeah.
So after our own heart, that's how we try to go in.
Yes.
To these as well. Cause it's, I don't know where you'll land on this, but my opinion on it is, you know, I'm mortal. I'm only going to get so many new From games in this mold. I want that experience of everything being a surprise.
Absolutely.
Because I get limited number of that. Like at some point I'm going to die and I'll never get another one.
Mm-hmm.
Or they'll stop making games or, yeah, I guess that's very fatalistic for me to think FromSoft will still be making Soulsborne games by the time I die. I guess that is, that only really makes sense if I'm dying in like, you know, pretty soon. But hopefully not. But that's how I like to go into things too. And this game was specifically very good for it.
You know, that would be my intention for other games as well. But there were cases where, for example, Dark Souls 3, they would invite me out to this really cool event to play it early. And so in those cases, I would be like, well, You know, I got invited out to Japan to play Sekiro early, and I'm not going to turn that down.
That's an experience. Yeah,
it is. Yeah, I had never been to Japan, and I was just like, man, just for that alone, and I'm not going to go there and be like, never mind, I'm not going to play. I just want to say hi. You know. Yeah. So, but with Elden Ring, you know, I was discussing with my, you know, whoever I was interacting with, and I just said, I want to stay as in the dark as possible. And, you know, if there's events, let me know, but I'm probably not going to do anything like network tests or any of that. So
no.
I did it. I stayed in the dark.
This is maybe peeking behind the curtain, and you can decline to answer this if it is, but do you have like a contact with them that reaches out to you when you say whoever you're talking to? Do you have a regular person?
Well, I mean, it changes a lot. So over the course of the years, maybe like every year or two, like I feel like I have a different point of contact. But yeah, like right now I have somebody that I would message regarding that. Sure.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Mm-hmm. And they weren't inviting people out to Wales for Elden Ring.
Not that I know of, no. Yeah.
It's just the no Lobos allowed party.
So you said by like day five or six, you kind of knew this thing was going to be, you know, kind of take over first place for you. Was there like a particular thing that you hit that was like, yeah, this clinches it? Or was it just kind of a slow accumulation of like, they really know what they're doing here?
Yeah, I think it was a slow ramp where I just kept seeing things and going, okay, that's very cool. Like, you know, especially with comparing to previous experiences and just understanding like how they've adapted or updated systems or added new systems. And I think just especially after new boss fights and just new experiences as far as their areas and that sort of thing, I just kind of it's something that for me is important to wait to say. And so I waited, but then it got to that point and it didn't let off. So
yeah, you have to separate out the kind of blush, you know, that first blush.
Right. Yeah. Especially for something I've been waiting for so long. It's the long, you know, it had been the longest. And since I started playing Soulsborne games that we had to wait for anything, you know, any piece of content. So, yeah.
It's fascinating that it ended up being so generous. Like the volume was commensurate with the weight.
It was, you know,
they didn't have to do, but it is one of the things that it is my favorite FromSoft game as well. And it's very like, I still have a nostalgic, you know, I love Dark Souls so much.
Of course.
Introduced me to this whole thing, helped build my career. But in terms of just games, this is my favorite, partly because of that generosity and then just because of freedom of approach.
Yes.
As a thing I really value. Has that aspect of it informed its kind of its place for you? And then also has that informed your relationship with your kind of niche of challenge runs and stuff? Oh. So to clarify, like there are a lot of different ways to do something in Elden Ring.
Of course.
And to play it. I can imagine your eyes lighting up at that in terms of how you have approached these games in the past.
Yes, 100%. And I would say that for me, it feels the most like Dark Souls 1 for those reasons. Like, I don't know what it is about Dark Souls 1, but 2 and 3, I guess, just feel a little bit more closed off in terms of those options that you have. Because 1, I can start and I know I can go like hit up like some like 13 bosses in any order. Boom. And, you know, the other games, maybe not so much. And Elden Ring kind of recreated that feeling, especially with the different builds you can have and just the openness. I'd also kind of more recently started to play a lot more open world games. And so I was already familiar with the formula and very open to it. And to just have the Souls experience, but on such a grand scale that it hadn't yet. It would just, I don't know. It checked every box for me.
Yeah. It really aligned with a lot of our values as well. Like the things that we liked about the past games.
Yeah.
I personally, since I had gone in so blind, the first thing I saw even trying to go in blind is some people who were complaining about it and the complaint they used was, oh, it's just open world Dark Souls. And for me, I'm like, oh, man, it's just open world Dark Souls?
Like, right.
Oh, it's still going to do all the Dark Souls stuff and controls basically the same way? Like, that's great.
Yeah.
You know, even down to like, it's funny, like even people who complain about reusing animations and such.
Yeah. Right.
Like,
right.
Tree spirits. I'm like, no, I like that.
Yeah. And they're different enough, right? You recognize it. You see the stone imps and you're like, oh, there's that thrall. Like he's coming at me, but it's different enough that it's still a new experience. Almost kind of like it's more like an homage to me or like a throwback. And I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. But they always elaborated on it, so it wasn't just literally the same experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And having all those similarities, okay, you know, I'm going to be in this catacomb. But, like, most of the catacombs have, like, a cool thing about them, right?
Yeah, yeah,
it's true. And just you wouldn't see that cool thing if you weren't looking at kind of this common baseline that was shared between them, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's got a thing where it's kind of in conversation with the previous games. You know, like a take that I've seen a lot and that I ascribe to at least to a degree is that this is kind of an apotheosis of what they've done. Hmm. It's like a lot of their gameplay obsessions put together and some of which realized as well as they've done. You know, the from immersive sim DNA of like you solve this problem how you'd like to solve it is at its strongest here.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it's so open, and like you were speaking to earlier, the fact that you're playing the game and it keeps opening up and opening up in ways you wouldn't even imagine, like going underground, the whole second layer of map, and it's just there's so much, and it keeps giving, and for a game of its quality and you know and its hype and to live up to it and more, in my opinion. I don't know what the development period was, but only to have to wait a couple of extra years than, you know, we normally would for a Souls title for something that's three times plus as large and
expansive.
Just,
yeah. Absolutely.
Great experience. Yeah.
It's interesting to hear you say that it hasn't, you know, that you very early on, it kind of took that top spot for you and hasn't changed. And the thing that's interesting is that, you know, we've talked to a few different people on this series and stuff, and a pretty common refrain that I've heard from people is that like the first playthrough of Elden Ring is absolutely magical, but there are diminishing returns for it. How did that shake out for you? Was that something that you just didn't feel, or did you have to work to approach things differently to avoid that? Can you see the validity in that, or is that something that just feels off base to you?
Well, it definitely, I think, depends on your play style and also what you want to do with the game. For example, if you're wanting to PvP this and that, you know, that might affect things differently. If you only really like casters, or if you stick to one sort of build. But for me, I've experienced the launch and the life of these games enough that I know I'm going to play it in so many different ways. And the magic of these playthroughs on subsequent playthroughs is that I know there's always something new that I'm going to find. I will do Dark Souls 1 runs these days and still find things. Like, I did not know this enemy had this attack or something. Something so small, so minuscule. But the fact that I've played through it easily, you know, hundreds of times and still find new little things here and there occasionally is just what kind of... you know, it keeps it going for me on multiple playthroughs. Even if I don't find something on a playthrough, I'm like, well, in the future, I might. So it's kind of a little bit of a breadcrumb that leads me that direction.
Now I know where not to look for new stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you, so we are recording this at a time where, it's all but confirmed that we have the DLC. We know some of the things that are coming, for it. What do you want to see most in that? And you can be as specific or as general as you like.
I'll be honest. I have avoided any sort of like, I don't know if there's even been leaks or what, this and that, but you know, file digging for DLC content. Personally, I just, with how FromSoft has developed their games, my feeling is always that I want the developer to be enjoying what they're making, and whatever they make, as long as they're happy with it, like, I will accept that. So it could be that they, you know, change the terrain or something and just reuse a level, but they build it in a certain different way, or we go to the moon and have a whole adventure over there. Like, it's you know, what is it, seven games? I can't. Dark Souls 1-2-3. It's so many games of trust built for me,
yes,
that I believe in whatever they want to do. And so I leave it to them. And I don't really even put thought into what I would want, because they've always given that to me. And I don't have to think about it myself.
So, yeah, it's like a trust thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's like a confidence. Like, you're, there aren't, for in my experience, you know, and we talk about this sometimes in the network, there are only so many developers where I feel that with. You know, there's a feeling that we refer to a lot as like being taken care of.
Yeah.
You know, like kind of held by a game almost.
Definitely.
And yeah, From pretty consistently does that.
Yeah.
It's, if you were to ask me generally, like, I would have an answer, like, you know, what really draws me to the game is like, you know, good challenging boss fights that are interesting designs that might make me, you know, just kind of be like, what is this character and what is he all about, while I'm fighting it, that sort of thing. And but I'm pretty sure that's what they're going to give us. So that's what I expect.
their track record is so good at that. I mean, just in terms of, you know, most of the time, the best boss encounters in a given FromSoft game are in the DLC, right?
Yeah.
And also the ones that feel like most, you know, kind of integrated into the lore too. Like that tends to be where they hide their, gold, you know? So it's kind of hard to be worried that you're not going to see that. Right.
Yeah. Which in my opinion and my experience is often so counter to DLC, where it might be like, they're just trying to, you know, keep the game alive and keep some revenue coming in for that game. So they make something, just to, you know, put it out there, but it's totally opposite for FromSoft. It's just, their DLCs. Yeah. I would agree with that sentiment that it's always like the best of the best.
How dare you impugn Lords of the Fallen Curse of the Labyrinth or whatever.
Okay. Well, I do love Lords of the Fallen. That DLC.
Hey, you're preaching the choir. It is, as a Lords of the Fallen, defendish. Not quite defender, but you know.
I'll just lead you to this. I'll check back in 15 minutes.
Okay, all right. Yeah.
It's a Lords of the Fallen cast now.
Oh, all right, let's go. Yeah.
I can't remember anyone's name in that game.
there's a big hand.
Harken.
Yeah.
Because Harken, there we go.
We would always make the pun of that we would harken back to something. I don't know. Anyways. Yeah. Let's continue. We're going off course. off the rails.
My bad. I'm really looking forward to it too, just for the exact same reasons that you mentioned. Mm-hmm. What about, like, do you think, so something that, and I'd be curious to see whether you agreed with this, something that I think has borne out in those seven Soulsborne games is that I think From is kind of at their best when they're not doing sequels.
Right.
You know, they're doing these kind of spiritual sequels. They take the same skeleton, but they do a new world.
Yes.
With that in mind, do you think that there is room for, I think that we'd all play it, right? If they did Elden Ring 2.
Right.
But do you think that's a good move for them? Or do you think that they're going to now having, you know, as some people feel, having said what they can say with this mode, with this kind of set of gameplay concerns and stuff, if it is time to move on to something different with that?
You know, I feel the same as with the others, which is that I'm sure they could, you know, create lore based off of what's already there and create a new story to go that ties in and this and that. From my understanding, I've always just kind of understood that Miyazaki doesn't want to do that, and he wants to move on to the next thing. With Elden Ring, I feel like I want to say that it's more likely that they would do an Elden Ring 2 just because everything that they've put into it, you know, the collaboration with George R.R. Martin, the much longer time they spent kind of polishing and developing that. But I don't know. It's really hard to say. And again, it boils down to the fact that I want to make sure that they're doing what they want to do, that Miyazaki wants to do another.
Yeah.
Because I feel like a lot of people with Dark Souls 3 just kind of feel like, you know, the publishers were just begging him, like, do one more Dark Souls. And he was like, all right, I'll just pull in all these ideas I had from the others and just kind of, we'll do some throwbacks. And of course, I loved Dark Souls 3, and especially the DLC, which is Ringed City is probably my second favorite DLC of all of them. And I think they just, you know, got better at making what they make. But could it have been better if it was a totally different IP, a different idea, you know, behind it? Like, maybe.
Yeah. I think you really landed on something where it's, you can feel in the product and in playing it, like, where there's more or less passion, I guess.
Right.
You know, so like them doing what they want to do is what is the reason why the non-sequel games have worked out so well and had such a clear identity. Like, they're more interested in that, trickles down into the hands.
Yeah.
You know, as you're playing.
Yeah. And I think it really is a testament to the fact that they, you know, when they do these new titles, from Dark Souls to Bloodborne, sure, people recognize the developer, but that name, like Bloodborne, doesn't have the power that Dark Souls has. So the fact that, you know, Bloodborne's kind of a different case since it's only PS4, but, you know, Elden Ring, nobody had ever heard of Elden Ring before, and yet it's done the best out of any of the games.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily the name, it's not necessarily the world, it's just what they've built and like how they've built it that earns its own merit for that.
I have no doubt that people are going to find their way to whatever they do next if they decide to choose a different name or work in a different space. Like, yeah. I'm down with that. My worry would be like the bean counters. Like, is there a business case? Would they also believe that? Right. Like, you know, like, okay, they found their way from Bloodborne and Dark Souls to this. They're gonna, you know, make the same move. I would almost worry that, like, you know, success hides problems, and also like can end up being a golden handcuff, and it'd be like, oh, well, we have to do Elden Ring now. That's what put our name on the map. Mm-hmm. You know, just I could see a bad faith business case being made to, you know, handcuff them to that. But hopefully it won't happen. Yeah. Hopefully, again, trust is built. They've demonstrated with the product that they don't have to do that.
Yeah, I agree. And I think I remember when Sekiro was announced and details were coming out and people learned that it was, I think, Activision publishing. A lot of people were concerned, like, oh, Activision's going to, you know, kind of encroach on their development process and this and that. And they said that they were just going to be hands off. But, you know, I think that it shows that there is a trust with From Software and what they've created, that we should let them do what they do because they do it very well and it's working so far. So until it doesn't, maybe just kind of leave it alone at that. So
they've earned it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of shifting gears a little bit to something goofy and light. what do you got in terms of like first and worst in Elden Ring? So like, you know, what, you know, favorite boss, least favorite boss, and this can be on any axis. This could be, you know, design, or this could be
right.
You know, pissed you off, and then same with area, like zone.
Okay, all right, so I got several favorites. You know, when you say favorite boss, I have to go with Malenia, because at the core of my experience is challenge, and I'm always trying to you know, both from a player but also very meta, like understanding, figure out like how are they going to make it more challenging and what are they going to do. And I know a lot of people are really upset about her waterfowl dance, of course. But, you know, the first time I fought her, I knew that this was going to be a very challenging fight after a few attempts. And I decided then and there that I was going to learn it, like, with my future challenge runs in mind. So I did the, you know, I learned to parry her. I learned to just deal with waterfowl dance at close range and everything like that. No summons, no nothing like that. Because I knew I would have to be dealing with that. And so I think that doing that and really putting the time, I think it took me like 16 hours to beat her the first time, because wow, I was learning her as if I was doing like a level one run. Right. And, mm-hmm, and so it was tough. But after going through all the motions and figuring out all the mechanics and what works for me, I had a real appreciation for it. And the visuals of the fight are great. I love the character and the area. And it's just, I enjoyed it a lot. I'm real interested to hear what you guys have to say. As far as though, man, it's hard for me to put a lot of effort or energy into deciding a least favorite boss, because there's almost never, in really any game, a point where I go, man, this is just, I'm not having fun. I'm not enjoying this. I mean, it does happen, but certainly not in Elden Ring. So for me to pick one would just kind of be arbitrary and maybe something that was forgetful for me. So, but I don't even really want to pick one based on that.
Can I test you with one just to see? I'm actually curious, because we just recorded an episode earlier where we talked about one of these, the Ulcerated Tree Spirits.
Okay.
I do not like those very much.
Mm-hmm. I can understand that.
Tree spirit haters.
Yes. they need to settle down. They are more shock and awe, you know, and more so shock and awe than actual like substance to the fight. But also they have that grab that is basically instant death, which never feels good. I think they look neat, but every time one shows up, it is just the pits.
They also get used a lot.
Yes.
I will say I'm not. Yes, that's what I was going to say, is that I'm not necessarily excited when I see one, because there were, I don't know how many, like 12 or something like that.
Yeah, 6 or 7.
No, I think it's even more than that.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah,
there's like the triple
ones out in the world. Yeah,
there's a triple fight in the Ash area, Ash triples Capital.
Yeah. No, triples are not safer. Not now.
In this case,
yeah. There's so many. Yeah. So. Yes, that's definitely not one of the bosses I'm most excited about. It definitely uses the camera as a tool very well in fighting against you. Mm-hmm. And it's very floppy and not unpredictable, but kind of hard to read.
Yeah.
That, so, yes. Okay. I can see that, but I will not say that I do not enjoy fighting an ulcerated tree spirit.
I appreciate the attitude. I'm not going to force you to like, goddamn it, we're not leaving until you say you don't like one.
That really wouldn't work on this call where
it wouldn't.
You know, like anyone could leave at any time.
Right.
It is courtesy that we're only.
You mentioned area. There are a lot of really cool areas. I'm sure a lot of people's favorites are like, you know, Shifra, the underground areas with the, by the way, I'm not sure if you knew, but chat constantly reminded me that is pronounced Shifra and that it's Scottish, I think.
It's a Gaelic for like changeling kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Cause I would say Siofra or something, but anyways, those underground areas were very, very cool to see, just the stars in the sky. I mean, I love space myself, so it was wonderful. I genuinely, every time somebody asks me, they're very surprised, but I'll say Lake of Rot, sorry. Rot Lake. That's
we just talked
place
about that today. That was what we talked about before getting on mic with you.
Yeah.
So we just did that episode. Interesting.
Interesting. It's really interesting. No, you're in good company with that.
Great.
We like it.
Yeah.
Because the Lake of Rot, I think the average person, maybe based on my Twitch chat at least, I'll say Lake of Rot and they'll be like, what? That place is just like gross and terrible. And I'm like, yes, yes, it is. Like that's nice. That is a place I dread to be. And like, it does it.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a video game. I don't have to smell it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, even if it's just watermelon soup or whatever, you know, this its place, instills a kind of horror or terror of just being in that place. And I don't know. I love it.
The water is greasy. You look at it. Yeah. It's iridescent.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
There's an oil slick. The one when you said you may be surprised. So the area that we've kind of been beating up on, that only a couple of our patrons have said they like, is Subterranean Shunning Ground, which I struggle with that area. Like, it's not, you know, the worst thing in the world. It's probably not even the worst, like, sewer level that they've ever done. Yeah. I just find it very confusing, and the omens to be, you know, mini boss fights, basically, of which there are many over
there. There's a lot of paths in there, and it really took me, I still will probably get lost, but I've run through, you know, that little sewer areas where there's slimes and rats and you got to fall down maybe or not. And then, it's very complex and easy to get lost. So that's definitely on the lower end. It's not a place I want to go or do go, honestly, very often on my Elden Ring runs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I agree.
Yeah.
And as earlier it said, we're around boss. Like, I think Cole and I both like Malenia.
Yeah.
As a fight. Oh. Like the waterfall fall was really fun for me to figure out.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
Like that was the fun part. If I had to, the thing that bothered me more was the healing. Because I don't not get hit. Like, that's not how I play the games.
Yeah.
Like, I'm gonna get hit. But the waterfall was a fun challenge to figure out how to get past that, I thought.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like her, and I felt really good getting over her. My relationship is, I don't play these games with a huge amount of rigor, so I kind of threw everything that I had at her. Every advantage that the game would confer, right? Because if it's in the game, it's fair game, right? So
absolutely,
you know, I'm definitely not going in and being honorable about it, but like you know, it's kind of one of the few encounters that feels like it is attempting for the Maria of the Astral Clock Tower kind of deal. And getting there. And I like her storyline too. Like, I think she is a very tragic figure. That area that she's in is like a really good challenge, challenge dungeon kind of deal.
Yeah.
You know, you just feel like a big accomplishment even just getting there. So like, Malenia is great, even beyond just like challenge and rigor kind of point of view.
Yeah. I would say that though, thinking about it more, I think the boss that I have the most fun fighting in terms of just mechanically dodging, and it's like a fun dance for me, is Horlu, or Godfrey's first phase for me is more fun, but Horlu even is just, I love dodging him and just throwing in my hits, and it really does feel like a dance.
I like the wireframe of that. I don't like that it's kind of like, it's styled like a wrestling kind of thing.
it's very silly.
Yeah,
it is
for the end of the game to me.
It's funny. When I was in Japan talking, we got to interview Miyazaki, and it wasn't anything I asked, but it just came out that he is a big wrestling fan. So when he was talking about the ogres in Sekiro, he was like, I just wanted a character that's like an awesome wrestler. And so that comes to mind when we fight Horlu and he's just pile driving you or whatever. And he's an intimidating guy. So
absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you agree? Like, a lot of people think that Malenia is the hardest boss that From is made. Do you agree with that?
I would. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I think about like Orphan of Kos is up there. Some people say Ludwig or Lawrence, maybe Nameless King, but yeah, honestly, none of them took so long, for me to learn, and are still a very big threat. If I go to Malenia now, I might kill her first try, but I might die for an hour also. So with just a normal build.
Yeah.
It's a tough fight. It's easy to very quickly, lose on a single mistake or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. The kind of thing that the super tough bosses in these mm-hmm. games have in common.
Mm-hmm.
You
know, right.
Like kind of a you very, very harsh
yeah.
penalty for a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, do we have anything else, Cole?
No.
Is there anything that we missed? Anything what is next for you in Elden Ring? Do you have any kind of playthroughs planned on your Twitch channel? And also plug your Twitch channel. Tell people where to watch you and where to support you and such.
Oh, well, sure. Yeah. twitch.tv/LobosJr. That's LobosJr. Yes, I have a lot of runs planned, and I've done a lot of runs, but there's still so many to do.
Give us a juicy sleucy. Tell us one you're gonna do that nobody knows about yet.
Well, one's not even a challenge run, but I still haven't done necessarily all the NPC quest lines because I've been waiting to do a lore percent run where we go through and do all of the NPC quest lines, something like that.
Oh, nice.
I still really want to do a guard counter only run, which you know is a new mechanic to Elden Ring that I think it's a really high stagger, you know, ability that could be really interesting to try and do an entire run only with those guard counters. I still haven't done like a dragon incantation only run. Like that's one that I want to do, or something a little more difficult with no roll and no block. So mostly just sprinting.
Yeah.
So yeah, a lot of challenges left to be done.
That's great. Yeah. That'll be really cool.
Yeah.
So cool. Well, yeah, I think you know, everybody who's listening to this, you probably know Lobos. We talk about him all the time, but you should definitely go and subscribe to that Twitch and check out entertaining and, you know, just good people. Something I appreciate about you, Lobos, is, you know, you, something that we try to do that I think that you're similar in that, like, you know, you try to be like a complete person on Twitter and stuff. So like, you know, you will keep kind of your views out on Front Street. Like you want to be inclusive and you want people to feel welcome and stuff in your environment.
Yeah.
And that's important to us as well. So it's something that we really respect.
Yes,
absolutely. Like my whole mantra in streaming was always just I'm on the couch with my buddy playing video games and they're watching and like we're talking about the games. And so whatever comes up, it's just I want to be there and interact in that sort of situation. So be myself, basically.
Yeah, it's great.
It's good value.
I highly recommend.
I appreciate that, guys.
Wow, I can't remember when I've heard a more interesting anecdote.
those clowns in Congress. Yeah.
Those clowns in Congress have done it again. So we recorded that a long time ago because we work around schedules for people we interview. Now we are going to read our interview with you. The patrons reach of these. We end up putting out a call for responses. We also end up doing some follow up on the episodes. We'll read some of that. Some of that, it's going to seem we get breeze past it. It's because we talked about a little bit of this last episode. We're gonna just read your responses and your follow-up here and respond when appropriate.
So starting out here with Jean Sebastian, you can 100% access the Dragonkin soldier from the Shifra River well, that lower level there. There's a way gate on top of some broken pillars. You can climb up somewhere around that lightning orb infested lake area. That's why I didn't find it. I did not like being in that lightning orb infested lake.
I'm sure I did find that when I was playing through the game. Way gates kind of fuck up my review.
Yes.
Process, like when I'm going back through an area to refresh my memory, waygates as being the kind of spatial cheat that I kind of feel like they are to the world design, like not necessarily a bad way. Like I don't love them. I don't feel like it's a huge problem, but I don't tend to conceptualize them because they don't fit into traditionally how a world is designed. So it's really easy. So thank you for the correction.
Yeah.
It is easy to forget about them.
Yeah. There were people listening who were confused that we were able to access that Dragonkin soldier from the top.
Yeah. 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 Who had only come the other way. And that's, you know, that makes sense. I know. I remember one of my friends who I finally, when I convinced them to play Dark Souls 1, did not realize you could go into Blighttown from the front way. They were like, what is this weird area that you just go down to the boss and there's all this stuff and there's no reason to go there?
I know, right?
You know, and it feels real weird if you climb it and there's just like, what do you get? Uchi Katana.
Are you talking about me?
Yeah. No, I mean, you also did that as well. But I mean, several people have done that.
Right.
And that is the other side of having multiple paths of ingress.
Mm-hmm.
Drew says, on Newman, I study ancient Rome a lot, and the word was used in the early part of the empire in some surviving texts. There it meant divine power or nod. Ovid used the term in his work. It would indicate divine in natural or man-made things. Before their religion developed anthropomorphic ideas of God, they would find the divine in, for example, a boundary marker, which to them would contain a divine power in it. Ovid uses the word referencing Terminus, which is the god of boundaries. There was also a mythical king, Numa, who is not known to have truly existed, but was a successor to Romulus, the founder of Rome. He is supposed to have done a lot to add to the early religion.
Makes sense.
Neat.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was not familiar with the word. I do not study ancient Rome.
Same.
Thank you. Appreciate that added context. I don't know what, you know, I don't have like a grand theory about what that might reflect on Elden Ring, but I appreciate having it in the quiver for future connections.
Yeah. If it's older than the Romans' idea of an anthropomorphic set of gods, then probably that is trying to draw some kind of connection to them predating the Order of the Earth Tree to a certain degree, you know?
Yeah. Why is Terminus, the god of boundaries, not being used now? Like, that's such a cool fucking idea.
We should bring it back. I mean, just for interpersonal boundaries.
I invoke Terminus. Like, whenever anyone gets too close to you, like, I love Terminus.
you got really loud there. Back off your microphone a little bit.
I will never back off my microphone
I'm just so passionate about Terminus.
Yeah, if you don't yell loud enough, he cannot hear you. So, yeah. Terminus is also the god of noise gates, given that it's for boundaries. So, like... He has shunned you if that was too loud.
Yeah. He is also god of the 0 dB digital recording line after which things clip. So.
Yep. Yeah. But I'm saying he did not bless you.
Okay. So, all right. Okay. Yeah. So we have Drew, who writes in saying, I also initially thought that EG committed suicide, but you can find several Black Knife assassin bodies in the road near them. And of course, he's covered in black flame. There's also a couple of bodies near Blythe. Although he must have gotten the upper hand. As for who's behind the assassins, ...
Yeah, we talked about this a little bit. Mm-hmm. I want to say in one of the episodes, a follow-up. The cadence of how EG speaks before this happens makes it sound like he is, at the end of his life and is ready to end. The way that I read it was there was assassins, he fought them off.
Yeah.
And then... his time was done. What I might be, full disclosure, we're recording this before we do our annual streaming event. So my sleep schedule is all kinds of messed up. I've been staying up and everything, so I'm a little bit foggy headed. I don't think the Black Knife assassins are associated with Black Flame. Am I misremembering?
Yeah, the Black Flame is associated with the Rune of Death. And therefore, by a kind of a circuitous way, if the Black Knife assassins had the Rune of Death to kill Godwin, their weapons would be imbued with it. And I even
that
think,
makes sense. I was getting a little bit confused because I'm sleeping during the day and up during the night.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, the question is, how much do the Black Knife assassins actually have to do with Ronnie? Right.
Yeah. Yep. Which is the next question asked about a little bit in terms of how we interpret Ronnie, generally being pro Ronnie. I still feel like with the association, the revelations are coming later. Marika is heavily involved in that plot and would also make sense for her to try to tie up the loose ends around Ronnie. Sean says, I feel like you folks interpret everything that Ronnie says the opposite of what she actually says. I believe she's telling the truth when she says she organized the Knight of Black Knives. And just like I believe she was being truthful here when she basically tells the player to get the fuck out. I don't think she's joking or being cute.
Yeah. So what this listener is referring to, what Sean is referring to, is a line of dialogue. Let me see here. I should have actually just like clipped this. But she basically says something along the lines of, oh yes, I'm responsible for all of it. Right. You see the previous episode where we kind of talked about, us interpreting everything she says as the exact opposite of what she actually says. I think that's maybe a little bit too much. However, there is a certain amount of, delivery and subtext on the stuff. It kind of feels like this is just like, oh, so you're saying I did this too, huh? Okay. Well, yeah, no, just sure. Why not? I killed him. I killed everybody. Who didn't I kill?
Yeah, that is how we read it. It is a-okay and fine to read it mm-hmm. in a different way. Like I think that the inflection and the performance does a lot of work there.
Yeah, personally. I'll cut in the actual line here as well. Mm-hmm.
Quite the sleuth, aren't we? Indeed, I am the witch, Rani. I stole a fragment of the Rune of Death and used it to forge the godslaying Black Knives through fearsome rite. I did it all. But sadly for thee, the curse mark thou seekest is not to be found here.
Yes. She also specifically in that just says I did it all. She doesn't cop to the specific act.
Yeah.
She says she forged it, but she did not say she organized the Knight of Black Knives other than saying I did it all.
Yeah.
Which to me that does read as sarcasm. But again, you don't have to interpret it that way. That is nope. A-okay.
Yeah.
Our friend, a friend of the show and YouTuber, mm-hmm. who you should check out, The Lore Hunter, says, regarding the moons, the Black Moon of Noxella is said to be lost. Moon of Noxella, that's the source, which could mean it's gone or destroyed. With the memory stones being described as fragments, I've leaned towards the Black Moon being destroyed, which would make it a separate moon from the full moon and the dark moon. When you're up on Mana Celis, you can see both the full moon and the dark moon in the sky at the same time, which is very literally showing them as separate. So I think that they are different moons that use real world phases of the moon as a distinction.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. And I think that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's great insight. I think that's awesome.
Yeah. Sean does good work.
Sean does really good work. Apologies for any noise that comes through. I hope it's not coming through.
I don't think
they're doing some great. There's some drilling going on.
Fun.
With my neighbor, I like my new place. I moved in the summer, but they have been absolute dog shit about giving me heads up about when they're going to be doing work.
Oh, huh.
No matter who I talk to, like there's a property management company and a homeowner
I talk to,
and each of them like apologizes and tells me they'll tell me next time and then don't.
Do they know what you do for a living?
Oh yeah, they do. Okay. I've told them many a time and it does not seem to have an impact. I think it's a right hand not talking to the left hand.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. But like, and it's four sets of hands. It's a Rani. Uh-huh. It's Ronnie's top right hand not talking to her top left hand and her top bottom right hand not talking to her bottom left hand.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're also not talking to each other. It's awful. Mm-hmm. So yeah, apologies for that.
Yeah. Not coming through, but if it does, good. Oh, well. Fromaginator says, in case you weren't aware, there is an Elden Ring enemy and item randomizer. Haven't played it myself, but I saw a streamer do it, and it seems extremely fun. Also, as an enjoyer of Dark Souls randomizers myself, fuck the Chained Prisoner and fuck the DLC dogs.
Those DLC dogs do suck.
Yeah. I found this randomizer mod, and I'm going to mm-hmm. be playing it on Duckstream, Gary. It's after the fact.
Nice.
But yeah. No, I've got those randomized Resident Evils, but I figure on Sunday, going to juice us through to the end. I'm going to call an Elden Ring randomizer.
Nice. Yeah, I'm looking forward to checking that out for sure. And we'll do an episode on it mm-hmm. if it's as transmorphative as the Dark Souls one was.
Yeah.
For sure. Moving on to responses to this stretch of the game. Danny says, first time submitting. As a trans woman, the subtext of Rani's quest and the story carried a lot of rewarding subtext. For starters, she's one of the dolls, which itself is a bit of a meme, but the act of destroying her given body and taking the form of a femme role model has very trans undertones. Also, the narrative themes of autonomy, self-determination, and resisting the societal expectations thrust upon her spoke to me as a very trans experience. It's a win that the best ending of the game involves marrying a trans woman. Love the show and love this game all about god killing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I you know, obviously we don't have the point of reference, or, mm-hmm. you know, the experience to tie that, but the, you know, the seed of which that is universal, which mm-hmm. is an anti-authoritarian seed. Like yeah. you and I will buck against societal trends in some ways. Like I'm not comparing our experience to Danny's at all.
Right.
But that is a universal feeling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that is why that ending appealed to me and to you, and that kind of theme of the game of flipping the table. You
yeah.
know, the system is broken, so what good is it?
Yeah.
You know, who does the system benefit? Things like that. Mm-hmm. That maps onto a lot of things, and I love the idea that it maps on very strongly and more resonantly,
mm-hmm.
Resonantly to Danny.
Yeah. See our previous episode where we talked about that ending and kind of its equivalent to, you know, the real kind of anarchy, not the kind that people, you know, caricaturize. Just the idea of just fuck this hierarchy. Right.
Yeah. And reject the dogma.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that is playing there. Us not having the experience, that's an important point. I can intellectualize it, you know, and just by looking at it and reading this, I see Elden Ring having extremely trans kind of stuff going on with it, you know?
Oh, America.
America?
Like, there's a lot of this whole thing smacks of gender, I say, turning the lands between the lands of shit.
yeah.
It is this is a game deeply concerned with gender, and I'm sure that's going to make some people mad, but I think that what might make them mad about that, like, one, it's okay for you to have a different interpretation of something.
Mm-hmm.
But two, you might be feeling that universal theme. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that it's impossible to come away from Elden Ring and thinking about it without it feeling anti-authoritarian and anti-dogmatic. That's the part that you get. But mm-hmm. those themes really closely follow these other yeah. themes. And like, authorial intent is a little bit bunk mm-hmm. in a lot of ways. Like there's tons of discussion around this.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter whether we or you think that the intent was to make a narrative that resonated this way.
Mm-hmm.
That is the wrong question.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's fine to ask that question, but it's not damning. It doesn't do anything.
Yes.
You know, it's interesting, but only interesting.
Mm-hmm. You know, and like, this is not something that is new for the, for FromSoft. You know, there are
yeah, not at all.
Yeah, many trans reads on, Bloodborne Gwendol. that I've seen.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Yeah. Yep. And then, yeah. Yeah. So there's a, that's it. That's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Viva.
Viva. Mark says, "Hey guys, first time submitting a response. It seems like Ronnie's Quest could easily be considered the main quest of the game, given that it gives you reason to visit so many areas. Do you guys agree with this? And what do you think about this structure?"
I think of it as a kind of a parallel quest.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't feel optional because, I mean, it is optional. Strictly. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel optional because most of the game is there, and this is a game about exploration.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot imagine the version of sitting down to play this game and not wanting to peek into, you know, what's underground.
Mm-hmm.
What is the nameless city? You know, like I cannot imagine not wanting to see that, right?
Yes.
But the fact that this is so long and involved, and the most long and involved quest line they've ever done, it's basically like a parallel quest.
Yeah.
To me.
Yeah,
you know, and that makes sense with the how expansive the scope of Elden mm-hmm. Ring is. Like, Dark Souls does not really have a parallel quest.
No.
There are smaller short stories within it, but none that like function almost as a novella within the novel.
Mm-hmm.
Like this does.
I love the purpose that it satisfies, you know, which is in this grand open world game where there is like, yes, literal guidance of grace kind of pointing you vaguely in a direction. But still you can kind of, you know, go where you want to. Generally, there are some places you can't get to. Nokron, you know, you got to go through the crater, that plateau or whatever. Being that you get to Ronnie very early on, and by following the quest get brought to a bunch of, like, you know, let's say second quarter mid game kind of content in a guided way, giving you a reason to go to so many places. It feels like a very good kind of like progression design as well,
mm-hmm.
that you can completely ignore if you would like to.
The that encouraging you to get off the beaten path is in the game from the very beginning.
Yes.
Like, it's giving you a key that you can take in the beginning to send you into an endgame challenge dungeon. Mm-hmm. If you follow the guidance of grace, it's sending you right through a mini boss that will kill you in one shot. that stuff is right on Front Street.
Yes.
You know, and it's interesting. So like a work this big, sometimes I feel like the idea is you are not meant to do it all. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to kill two of the demigods in this, get two of the great runes. The idea that you play this multiple times and do different paths throughout. I don't get that sense from Elden Ring.
No.
Because the exploration is so intrinsically rewarding. Yeah. Like, I cannot imagine a playthrough that does not see Mount Gelmir.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine a mindset that doesn't wonder what's up there.
Right.
You know, it is a game where it's absolutely key. And the game does tons of things to show you. So I think Ronnie's Quest fits into that really well.
Agreed.
Yeah. Alex says, I love the entirety of Ronnie's Quest. Thematically, all I see is puppets, shadows, and delusions of past grandeur. This is seen in both Renala and Radahn. The clinging to old senses of purpose seems like a better treated version of the Anne Orlando conspiracy with Gwendolyn. I feel like George R. R. Martin helped bring these older ideas into a new light and color. I just love it. All of it. And then a cute little heart emoji.
Yeah. Thank you, Alec. Very well summarized succinctly.
Yeah. Agreed. You know, comparing to the Anne Orlando conspiracy is really good.
Yeah.
That's a really cool poll.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've not read enough, you know, Martin to, you know, to see the specific strings, but also I can totally believe it based on what I know.
Yeah. I still really want that novella to come out.
Agreed.
Get released in some form. I can 100%, as somebody who has read a bit of Martin, I'm not a Martin scholar, but I can 100% see it.
Yes. Edward says, Ronnie's Quest is the richest and most involved in the game. Her story weaves through some of the most interesting areas of the game, providing narrative reasons to visit many otherwise peripheral locations and uncover many of this world's most fascinating historical secrets. My best experience following her quest on my own first playthrough happened after defeating Radahn and seeing the comic descent. I knew that finding the comet's destination would be the next goal, but I had no idea where to go. So after searching around somewhat randomly, I decided to forget about it and for now and try to make progress elsewhere. Instead, upon returning to Limgrave to visit a merchant, I spotted a strange suspended trail of rocks hovering in the sky, seemingly in the direction of the Mistwood, which I hadn't returned to for many hours at this point. I jumped onto Torrent and rode into the woods toward the floating cosmic debris, soon coming upon a giant crater ripped through the ground. This moment, and the subsequent tense descent into the subterranean splendor of Nokron, was an absolute highlight of my first playthrough. I feel bad for players on later patches who won't be able to make this discovery so organically, since now a red dot simply shows up on the map for the crater's location. I get that some players feel positively towards this type of change, but for me, the risk that some players may miss the crater and Nokron is worth the joy felt by those who do stumble upon it, stumble across it on their own, without the intrusive help that Elden Ring so studiously avoids almost everywhere else in its design.
Yeah, that is a very valuable like experience on your playthrough. Mm-hmm. In a general sense, what this is speaking to, I have mixed feelings. Right. Mm-hmm. Like it's a tricky game to compare one person's joy to somebody else's frustration.
Yeah.
Like the conversion rate is not set
mm-hmm.
for those things. My feeling on this is that those little ease of use things like that, like the red dot or NPCs telling you where they go. This game contains a lot of serendipity in terms of stumbling upon things, and the player might not get this specific one, but they might get other ones, and that trade-off feels good to me. But again, I don't, it's like an impossible thing to value.
Yeah.
Right. Like I can't put on a scale my joy of discovery versus somebody else's frustration and make a qualitative choice between the two.
Right. It's, you know, I can imagine that there exist people who might not notice the dot, even though it is there, and then just in their travels have a similar experience, especially if their map is like really marked up and what have you. But yeah, mm-hmm. You know, trying to find the conversion rate between different people's joy at the sense of discovery versus frustration of not knowing where to go next. That's not something it's kind of like dollar per hour game value thing. It's like, it's kind of not for me to say.
Yeah. Too subjective.
Yeah. There was also somebody, a response that didn't make it through, but there was somebody who said that the crater is actually visible if you are up on Altus looking south.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you could actually see it if you're scouting. Mm-hmm. Quick reminder, if we don't read your responses, it's not because we don't think they're good. Or anything. We keep these a reasonable length. We try to condense, you know, if two people say similar things, you know, we'll choose one.
Yeah.
You know, and just kind of think that if your response was not read, but you read something similar, I consider that a stand-in, you know, for your response. Graham says about D, there's an interesting piece in the Deep Root Deaths episode where you're discussing D and his brother and how they are essentially reviled by all the other Golden Order. You dismiss the idea that the two bodies and one soul premise was more metaphorical, but even so, I find it interesting that the Golden Order was the sect to accept these two. Do you think there's any relevance to the dual nature of America / Radagon at the head of the Order and the sanctuary that these two might have found there? Also, is there room for the narrative that the D's were simply pawns and that their less than stellar morals and overall personalities could have at least been in part due to a result of them being rejected by so many sects due to their condition, only making them that much easier to radicalize by the Golden Order and exacerbate their innate faults to the level of dogmatic punishers that they became? So basically two questions, like one, maybe D's brother and D actually did share two souls. It wasn't an expression. This was literal. And that is why they found acceptance of the Golden Order. Because there's a little bit of a parallel there with America and Radagon. Mm-hmm. And then two, maybe their personality, they had been kind of radicalized by so much rejection due to their condition that they became zealots because of the Golden Order accepted them.
Yeah, that last one sounds plausible to me. You know, I don't think, seems unlikely. I don't want to imagine that somebody could just be born a horrible person who would gladly slaughter people, but, you know.
They might be. It's also like an interesting chicken and egg thing too.
Yeah.
Like they could have been, if the two souls thing is not literal with them, they could be, and I'm not using that as a proper noun, mm-hmm. not using indigenous person's term there. The two bodies sharing one soul rather mm-hmm. thing is literal, not metaphorical as the expression goes. If that's not literal, rather, if it's just an expression, they could have been real jerks and got rejected, you know, and then because they were rejected, became more jerks.
Yeah.
And then ended up joining the Golden Order. I think the America Radagon thing feels like a different beast to me, in part because that is kept secret.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a publicly accepted thing.
Yeah.
With them. So it's not like the Golden Order has a banner that's like, hey, if you're one soul and two bodies, come here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they keep that shit on lock.
Yeah.
You have to go get a very specific sorcery or a very specific incantation that only is used for that to reveal a statue secret for that.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if America is micromanaging to the point or if Dee was even around when she was shattered the ring. Right. To kind of bring this person in, like how high up could Dee have actually been in the organization to, you know, kind of just have his acceptance be motivated by this, by this secret. Right.
Yeah. No.
Don't know.
Yeah. Not sure. A fair interpretation for sure.
Yeah. Lucas writes in about Fia's quest saying, Ronnie's quest is exceptional, but I want to talk a little bit about Fia's quest and Godwin. I do think that it's debatable that the mending rune of death of the Death Prince restores regular death, as the rune of death does. It states that it will embed the principle of life within death into order, as well as this new order will be one of death restored. Life within death is impossible with normal death, but death restored implies that destined death will come back. I tend to lean into the idea that this rune is not essentially the rune of death 2.0, since the rune of death is with Malekith in a form powerful enough to break the immortality of the Erdtree. Fia also mentions giving Godwin a second life, and asks you to stay the persecution of those who live in death by becoming an Elden Lord. With normal death restored in the lands between, wouldn't that kill those who live in death, including Godwin? If it just brings those who live in death into the order, does that mean that they can now return to the Erdtree for rebirth? I don't have the answers and wish that it was more clear overall.
Yeah, I mean, it's not totally clear. The way that I read this was not that it is everyone's undead. I think there's almost room for both.
Yeah.
Right. Like, the undead are okay. We accept them. Mm-hmm. They're around. They do not need to be persecuted or anything. I think that Fia is 100%. This ending is not, skeleton inquisition, like go kill the skills. It could be both, mm-hmm. you know, like Dest and Death returns. You know, when you say that Dest and Death is with, Malekith, it's sealed. Mm-hmm. The only reason why that gets out from Malekith is because we go grab it.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like it's just about, mm-hmm. we have to go break that out and get it from them. And Fia, and this rune would probably not assume that is what is going to happen.
Right.
To me.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
I had not considered that the literal text of bring them into the order might mean that they could re-enter the cycle of birth and of death and rebirth, you know, to mm-hmm. be reborn through the Urtree, even though they are like kind of rejected from it. But that is a possibility that I would, you know, entertain. It's just a problem where there is so little explicit text.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, again, a fair interpretation. And, yeah. and as a reminder, that's part of the reason why I do these episodes, right? Like this is a complex text. We have our own takes on it, but we're not the main characters of the universe. We want to hear other people's as well.
Yes.
You know, moving on to Doug. Doug says, first playthrough, I thought Godwin's finned lower half was a huge reveal. In every depiction I could remember of Godwin, we intentionally don't see the lower half of Godwin's body. I thought that Godwin was imperfect like Moog and Margit. If Godwin was malformed in life, then it would give credence to America's disliking of Godwin. I think those primal aspects of Godwin were probably less pronounced than before. The Rune of Death defiled his body. You joked about the ants being Numen, but there's a fun parallel between America, a Numen, and the ants. The sites of lost grace and the guidance of grace are reminiscent of ant drones using chemical signals to guide fellow ants to conflict and sustenance. I can follow a guidance of grace strand and either find a lost grace near a merchant or directly to the boss's site of grace. Thanks for that one-off joke. It made me appreciate the game in a new way. The idea of those being pheromone trails is very funny.
I like it.
Even if it's not ant thing, like even if America's just leaving pheromones and is rubbing her pits on the steak.
Just rubbing her cheeks up against stuff like a cat. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I had forgotten about the pheromone trails on ants. That's a cool parallel to bring in.
Ants are fucking nightmares. They're neat, but I do have contempt for them. I don't want them in my home.
Oh, no, no. As for the lower half of Godwin's body already being finned to the max, the like painting that you see, like the slide of the Knight of Black Knives, we see him be his, from behind, his arms kind of being held up as the knife is kind of jabbed in. And then down by his waist appears to be it's obscured from behind by like a wrap of black cloth. So we do not see it is not depicted that he has a bunch of big fins. I don't know how likely it feels that he would have been
a merman
like that.
Yeah, he is standing.
Yeah,
in that thing, which would be difficult with the fins.
Mm-hmm.
I put that up to the death root and kind of similar basilisk features.
Yeah,
you know, and that is lending credence by the eyes being the same, like the basilisk eyes showing up.
Yeah,
in different places of death root. But again, a fair interpretation. Like, and not... I also can imagine that being really cool when you first see it and being like, oh shit.
Uh-huh.
You know, we haven't seen this, and this is what he was. He was a monster. Like, that is a fun piece of evidence. Like, put it on the board.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, he is not standing in that painting. He is on the ground. His head rises to like waist level on the Numen, on the Black Knife assassins around him. So you
gotta find a like look and see if there are any other images in the game, like in terms of paintings and such.
Yeah,
of Godwin, like that would be where if I wanted to pull this string, that's where I would go.
Yes,
like there are a lot of times, like when you're playing, you want to pay attention to paintings and art and stuff like that. But From does a tricky thing where they also just throw in like concept art of like zones,
on
walls as well. So it can get there's a lot of noise.
Mm-hmm.
There, but that would be what I would do is see if we can find one of them standing, see if we can find a picture with that implies a full stand.
The other frame that we get that is it looks less like a painting and more like a cinematic 3D render, maybe from one of the trailers that I can see. It also just shows him kind of from the waist up, or his lower half is obscured. It's one where he is lying face down, and the primary thing you can see is his golden hair kind of like flowing down over his face. His arms are kind of off to the side, and you can see the stabs of the black knives in his back.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Unclear.
But I agree with your take on going and looking for paintings and stuff.
Yeah, that would be, I mean, that's what I would try to do, because even just Google image searching it is a little difficult. Mm-hmm. You're going to find so many images of him in his final form because it's so striking.
Yeah.
And also, so many of his big melty mermaid face.
Also fan art and stuff.
Yeah.
Which is neat. I'm glad people do it, but also it's in the Google search results, and you don't want to take one of those as official.
Yeah. I would love a Design Works book for this for multiple reasons, but that would be a cool way to investigate this a little bit further.
Agreed. Eric says, "Hey guys, just wanted to mention an obscure piece of lore from my home state that surprisingly coincided with Godwin's appearance at the base of the Erd Tree. I live in Rhode Island, and when Roger Williams, the founder of our state, died, it was said that the roots of the tree he was buried under grew into a resemblance of his body. I read this in a Ripley's book when I was younger, which showed a drawing of a ball of roots grown into a well-defined resemblance of a person, and I just accepted it as fact. After listening to the Deeper Depths Part 2 episode, I remembered this weird fact and wanted to see it for myself. I did some research, and apparently what happened was the roots of an apple tree grew along the skeleton and vaguely took the outline of his spine, legs, and feet. So not exactly a monkey fish death prince, just a natural phenomenon occurring to a historical figure." So this is, if you just Google the tree that ate Roger Williams. Yes. You kind of see, this just looks like a tree root to me.
Yeah, it doesn't look like the link doesn't, the story is awesome.
Yes.
And I can imagine like with more stuff, this looking like it, but the image doesn't look like it.
Yeah.
There's a Lovecraft story where this happens as well. An early Dreamlands thing called The Tree, where something very similar happens to this.
Yeah.
I've been revisiting some Lovecraft shit, and I am deep in the Dreamlands garbage and bored out of my gourd, waiting to get to the good stuff. Fuck you, Irananon. Sell a face to these nuts. Like, I know. but yeah, I just recently revisited that one, and it's something very similar happens.
Selifaeus, more like Somnifaeus, am I right?
Jesus Christ, man. I love that man's work, and he's responsible for tons of things I like. His idea that like if you dreamed it is worth making a story about, big time doubt. You revisit that thing, because a lot of these dreams do not make good stories. Luckily, I'm getting to the good shit.
Cool.
Zach says, "You mentioned being a little bit frustrated by the two terms curse mark and hollow brand, but I think that's very appropriate that different people in the game have their own terms for something like this. It's notable that hallow is a linguistic cognate with holy. By the way, the Old English word hallig, wink wink, to the Golden Order, it is the mark of the curse of death. To the pro-death people, it is literally a sacred brand on the flesh. It's another great example of item names and descriptions exhibiting subjectivity to show that there are no moral absolutes in the world of Elden Ring." That's real cool.
I dig it. Yeah, that's...
Yeah, yeah. That didn't occur to me. That's awesome.
Squares away perfectly.
Yeah, that's really cool. I wish that had occurred to me. I feel a little dumb. That
yeah.
That is great.
Yeah. So, thank you for writing that
Thank
in.
You, Zach.
Yeah. Yeah. Matthew writes in, "My vote for the hardest boss in Elden Ring, hands down, it's Electo, the Black Knife Ringleader. No co-op or spirits allowed, so you're forced to beat her alone. It's a fight where you spend a lot of time dodging rather than attacking, so learning her moveset and finding attack openings was one of the most satisfying experiences for me in any From game. Not beating her for me is not an option, since I would miss out on the game's best spirit ash, Electo's awesome daughter Tish. Who can help me rip through entire boss phases like I'm skipping cutscenes." She's an instrumental part. I like that. She's an instrumental part of my strategies for beating Malenia, Malaketh, and Radagon, not to mention Placidusax. Have you guys beat Psax yet? Try Tish plus Envoy Bubbles. Trust me, it works. Beating Electo and obtaining Tish is a big incentive for me to complete Ronnie's quest. So it doesn't hurt that her quest is amazing, taking you to the coolest hidden corners of the Lands Between and rewarding you with one of the game's two coolest endings, Frenzied Flame being the other.
The I'm really looking forward to talking about the Frenzied Flame ending.
Yeah.
Which is not a good thing to have happen. You know, it's just I like it because it was my first ending I got. Uh-huh. And it's undescribably badass. You know, and I'm a simple man in some ways.
For all of our talk about like the actual kind of anarchy, the Frenzied Flame is the parody of anarchy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Agreed. Mm-hmm. You know, again, very, very hard boss.
Yeah. So,
Chimpanzee writes, during Rani's quest, I felt a real sense of camaraderie with the members of her gang. Working alongside Blade while consulting Silvus and EG for guidance made me really feel like I was part of something bigger. This all led to a journey underground alongside Rani herself, where she opens up to us, culminating in the first marriage in a Souls game that doesn't end with somebody getting stabbed in the face. At this point, I was surprisingly from George R. R. Martin. Uh-huh. At this point, I was completely on board with Ronnie. She wanted to upset the existing establishment, and I wanted to be there by her side when she flipped the table. What threw me was a loop was revisiting Blythe and EG after this ordeal, with Black Knife assassins strewn about in what appeared to be a botched assassination attempt. At the time, I had no reason to assume that the Black Knife assassins were serving anyone other than Ronnie, and I was perplexed as to why she would go so far as to cut off those who were devoted to her, and who she clearly and explicitly told us she loved in return. It made me stop and think, was this really the work of a woman that I had married, and what will happen when she no longer has a use for me? In hindsight, it might not have been Ronnie who put out the hit on her gang. Do you guys have any theories as to what the Black Knife assassins are doing there and who commissioned them to assassinate Blythe and EG?
I mean, my gut says stragglers and holdouts from America's regime.
Yeah, same with me. The way that there is a greater good argument for her doing this, like her casting aside her earthly companions, again, like mm-hmm. a rocket ship that's shunting aside the bits that
get her into orbit. Yeah,
the different stages. You know, what she is going for, at least again in our interpretation of it, is worth a lot. The world where she is keeping, you know, I am unworshipped, I am not known, but I'm keeping these outer forces at bay,
mm-hmm.
Is worth a lot.
Yeah.
Again, so I can see even the argument, even if she did just straight up do it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so, but it's not concrete.
Yes. Yeah. The threat that Blythe or EG could become, you know, her new pope inadvertently, you know, or become worshipped or have relics taken and stuff like that, you know, would be anathema to the order that she envisions. So I could also see that being the case.
Yeah, agreed.
And finally, here, Tarnisha says, could you please talk more about your respec experiences in this part of the game? I'd never played non-melee, and I was intimidated by the idea of respec. You say that you are old, but I have a generation on you. Completed my first video. Yeah, but I have a generation on you. Completed my first video game ever last year, and have played only one other Souls-like game, Dark Souls 1. Upgrade of Bloodhound's Fang, Brass Shield, and Hornbow worked very well for my hero class until I literally died for more skills/tools with the Baleful Shadow. Artorias led to a similar revamping. So I respect to Dex and Faith and began upgrading a seal. Play on a loop. I took you for dead. No matter, it's all the same. Lay out your arms then, being what Blythe says when you die. Having no shield,
or when you start to fight, rather.
Yeah, when you start to fight, yes. Having no shield makes me feel super vulnerable, so I use either shield/seal or shield/the Bloodfang sword And I am loving the new options. Not sure if I can take if it can take me through the rest of the game, though. A side note on fashion. I love the simple altered Snow Witch robe, which gives a chance of fast rolling for whatever reason. Doesn't get in, nearly as dirty as my previous cloth garb. Maybe it's infused with soap, or the Snow Witch has a germaphobe thing going on.
I love the idea of it being like polyester and just stain resistant. Like, I brought polyester to the lands between. Mm-hmm. So in terms of respec stuff, I respec'd many times, but didn't stick with it that often.
Right.
Weirdly enough, like, I would, I respec'd in my second playthrough that I did when I got the, sword of, moon, or the sword of, night and flame. Mm-hmm. And then respec'd again when I got the moonlight sword. Those are the two that stuck. Several other ones I would find a neat weapon and mm-hmm. really want to check it out, but then I would find that my muscle memory and my, like, I was already playing in the way that I like to play.
Yes.
And my muscle memory, like, the devil I knew was more important. Mm-hmm. And I figured I wanted to have any new experience basically from the ground up.
Yes.
There.
Yeah. Almost exactly the same for me. You know, it would be for trying out something that seemed cool, or for fixing minor mistakes. And by like minor, I mean, oh, for this task that's coming up, I'm going to want to use this particular spell. I'm like three intelligence short of being able to use it with a particular, you know, upgrade materials that I have, you know, the different stat boosts and things like that. So I'm going to go back. I'm going to respec like generally just a little bit. And then, mm-hmm. you know, use that. And then the next ball that I hit, I'm going to do that again. So it was very marginal changes that I would end up making, which, you know, is no less important because, you know, everything lives on the margins, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Generally the same. I wish I was a little bit more free with it.
Yeah.
Because the game really does give you a lot of opportunity for it, even though like a little bit less in terms of upgrade material. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting the way that they do kind of a halvesy. Like, they're very generous with just actually respecing your stats. Mm-hmm. You do have a limited number of times you can get a weapon up to snuff.
Yes.
Which can kind of feel bad, at least until New Game Plus, when you have all the bell bearings saved. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody, for writing in. We appreciate you. The next thing we will be talking about, we're going into the Altus Plateau. Mm-hmm. And the next round table will be after that major legacy dungeon, which I'm really looking forward to.
Yeah.
And then Gelmir, and then bada bing, bada boom, we're off to the races.
Yep.
It continues apace. We got that DLC more or less confirmed coming this way. Also in Elden Ring news, since last time we did this, you know, we have that stadiums. Come out those arenas. Probably not going to mess around with that too much, but I think that we will sneak in a PvP episode of this, where we will have somebody on who is engaged with it more, especially now that they have created a bespoke, like, and really honestly pretty interesting Colosseum system for it. I will try to hunt down somebody who spends a lot of time with that and see if we can get them on just to pick their brain.
Yeah.
And then, you know, dip in a little bit. It's never going to be, you know, of great interest to me, at least personally, but it is a big part of the game, so it merits a discussion.
Yes. Yeah. So, and we want to be complete. And that is absolutely the kind of thing that it makes sense to tag somebody in on.
Yeah, absolutely. We got our limitations.
Yeah.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. Again, Merry Christmas. I hope everybody is safe and had a good year. And we will see you next week with our first episode of the Altus Plateau.
Yeah. Umbasa.
And we all pray that we will have far more soon.